Good morning. Good morning. All right. Are you excited to be here? I am very excited to be here. It's wonderful to see so many new faces in the audience, and we're excited that you're here. And again, I want to welcome you guys. Extend that welcome to you, and hopefully you've enjoyed praising God this morning with the rest of us. I know from where I was sitting, it sounded pretty incredible. I know there must be a lot of emotions in the room right now. Some that are going, woo, free at last. And there are some that may be sad and maybe crying a little. But it's okay, parents, they'll stop eventually once you leave. I know that way, it was that way for me. I was the youngest, and when I left, my parents, woo, they were the ones doing this. And I know this because I came home and my room was not my own. And there was a better TV in there, and there was better furniture and new carpet, and everything had changed. But it's an exciting time, right? It's an exciting time of life for you guys, and we want to welcome y'all. Life groups are starting up very soon for our congregation. If you haven't been a part of life groups, I want to encourage you to think about doing that. There's a sign-up sheet down the hall in this direction. Life groups are an incredible time each Sunday evening where groups are gathering together in their homes, and they're sharing stories, and they're opening their Bibles, and they're digging into the Word with one another. I encourage you to be a part of that. Our university life groups are starting next week. If you want to be a part of those groups, hillcrestu.com is the way to get involved. We do the same thing. We meet in members' homes, and we share our stories with one another. I love telling stories. Do you guys love telling stories? I love telling stories. One of the things I love about life groups is they allow you to just gather in someone's living room and share a story. And that's how you really get to know people. You know, you don't get together with your friends and start saying, well, I was born in December 1979, and I lived in the same house all my life, and then I, you know, this is how many times I've eaten this particular sandwich over the course of my life, and this is my favorite food. We don't share facts, do we? If you do, it's pretty boring. But we share stories. We say, hey, remember that time that I broke my arm while I was mowing the lawn? And you're like, how could you possibly do that? Trust me, it's possible. Or you tell stories about what it was like growing up or about the things that you've done, and that's how you connect. This morning, I want to share a story with you. I want to share a Jesus story. And I mean that quite literally. It was a story that Jesus told. He loved to do that, didn't he? And he was good at it. You open up your New Testament and you look through, and there's all kinds of stories that Jesus told. We call them parables. And you'll see the headings, right? Parable of the dishonest manager, and parable of the talents, and parable of the, you know, on and on, the lost sheep, the lost coin, the hidden treasure, and there's parable after parable. And Jesus told stories for the same reason we do, to connect to people, to help expose truth and the way things really are and what's really in a person's heart. That's why he told stories. The story that I want to share with you this morning, I've never particularly enjoyed the title, The Parable of the Prodigal Son. And the reason I don't particularly like that title is because it suggests that this story is about one person, the younger son. But I don't think that's true, because there were a bunch of other people in Jesus' audience. There weren't just people who would identify with that younger son, but there was also the older brother and the father. That parable is about more than that younger son. It's about three men and their relationship. It's a story about brokenness. When I was growing up in the particular area I grew up in, it was a small town, and we had a certain way of speaking. We'll call it wrong. You know, we would put S at the ends of words that it didn't belong. Like, I'm gonna go to Walmart's. Well, which one? Walmart's what? Walmart's parking lot? Bathroom? I don't understand. Or we would say, I'm fixin' to do something instead of I'm about to do something, right? I didn't understand how that quite worked. And my favorite were the sayings. And I thought that these were unique to how I grew up. But as I met someone in our university group, I realized that maybe these are a little more widespread. And I won't tell you what her name is, except that her first name starts with Sam and her last name starts with Lakey. But she has taught me that these are more widespread. And so I thought I'd see if you know them. Lord willing, if the creek... All right, very good. What about caught between a rock and a hard place? Very good. Let's see. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And then there was one that I never really liked, but we would say, that there is broke. Anybody ever use this one? Oh, maybe not. I got one. Some would say, my friends would say, after a particular, you know, trashing their tractor or doing whatever, they'd say, that is broke beyond repair. Anybody ever heard that one? Broke beyond repair. And I never liked that because I didn't really agree with it. See, anything can be fixed. It just depends on how far you're willing to go to fix it. How much you're willing to pay. How much you're willing to sacrifice. Our world, the world we live in, is full of brokenness. This story that I want to share with you this morning is a story about brokenness. Sometimes it happens to us. Sometimes our lives get dashed on the rocks and we're ripped apart by circumstances beyond our control. And we momentarily lose hope. And for some, that moment never passes. Some of us do it to ourselves. We make decisions that are wrong. We chase after things that we shouldn't chase after, and we find ourselves getting farther and farther away from where we want to be. And we begin to lose hope, and we begin to lose sight of who we are, and we start to think that we can never make it back to where we were. And sometimes we're broke and we don't even know it. The Pharisees, the tax collectors, the sinners, the Jews, the disciples were all gathered around when Jesus told this story. And so he has something to say to each one of them. Next week, we're going to look at the father and the older brother. But this morning, I want us to focus on the brokenness of the younger son. If you have your Bibles, I want to invite you to open up and turn to the story of the prodigal son. And as Jesus tells this story, he lays out a choice for us. And like all good stories, it invites us to answer the question, will you listen? Will you hear? In verse 11, we are told that the younger son came to his father. And he says to him, Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me. And the father divided his property between them. At the very beginning of the story, Jesus makes it clear that this young man's brokenness stems from the fact that he cares for nothing but himself. He wants what is his, regardless of how it is going to affect anyone else. He values what is his above relationships that have always been there for him. It's unclear exactly what the law has to say about a transaction like this, but we know one thing. It is very irregular and incredibly disrespectful. An inheritance might be given in unusual cases of a marriage, but usually they always come after death. And so essentially this younger son coming to his father and says, I demand that you give me my share now, is saying, you are dead to me. I am severing my ties with this family. I am turning my back on you. I want what is owed me now. And shockingly, the father agrees. Can you imagine the level of selfishness that is involved in asking this? Because not only are you requiring your father to give you what is yours, but according to law, you are also requiring the father to give the rest of the family what is theirs. The older brother was given his too. Verse 12, and he divided, literally in Greek, his life. Between them. The father divided his life, his livelihood between them, forcing him into nothingness. In order to achieve his goal, he casts off every loving relationship he's ever had, turns his back on his family. He is only concerned for the here and now. Unable to wait to be off on his own, to be his own man, and to do his own thing with no one watching over him. When I was at Oklahoma Christian, I went on the Vienna Studies program, and this is very similar to the ACU's Oxford trip that they do. And as we were gathering together to leave, we had this big dinner, and they invited all the parents to join in, and they had talked to a lot of the fathers, and they had said, you know, we want you to come, and we want you to share a scripture of encouragement with your kids, and maybe pray. And so everybody was getting up, and they were sharing all these wonderful verses of encouragement and of love, and it was tearful, and it was joyous, and it was just so exciting. And then my dad My dad gets up, and you know what he reads? And the younger son took all he had and journeyed into a far country and squandered it with reckless living. Thanks, Dad. LOL, right? I mean, it was, well, like, what are you doing? And I think he was trying to tell me something. I think he was trying to tell me, be careful. Be careful. You're out on your own. Remember who you are. Be careful what you're about to do. Think about your actions. You see, this young man's brokenness stemmed from only caring about himself, and that led him into this reckless living. Verse 15, the younger son gathered all he had. He took a journey into a far country, and there he squandered his property in reckless living. You know, we're not told exactly what reckless living looks like, but we can make a really good guess. The Greek word for reckless living shows up in the New Testament three times. Oftentimes it gets translated as reckless, debauched, extravagant, loose, wild, and on and on. But it shows up in Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 18 in its noun form, and it says, "Do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery. But instead be filled with the Spirit." And so he sets against the kind of lifestyle, against the kind of Spirit-led living. In Titus chapter 1 and verse 6, the word is related to rebellious behavior. And then in 1 Peter chapter 4, Peter writes this, "For the time is past, suffices for doing what the Gentiles want to do, living in sensuality, passions, drunkenness, orgies, drinking parties, and lawless idolatry. With respect to this, they are surprised when you do not join them in the same flood." He's summing up all of this behavior, all of this way of living, the same flood of debauchery, reckless living, extravagance, wild, loose, same word. And so when you think about the young man traveling into this far country and living recklessly, it doesn't mean that he's going faster than the speed limit allows. It doesn't mean that he's sneaking into a movie theater. It doesn't mean that he's, you know, getting something and not paying for it. It means that he's living his life very, very destructively, making poor choices that goes against who he really is. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the group I Am Second, but they have different video testimonies of mostly famous people that talk about why they are second behind God. And there's one particular story that I thought of when I was thinking about this younger son. It's the story of a man named Brian Head Welch. He was the lead guitarist for a band called Korn. If you don't know who that is, count yourself lucky. Well, suffice it to say, they do not sing Christian contemporary music. Quite the opposite. And he talks about his life and how he thought he had everything that he ever wanted. He said it started off with just drinking parties for us, and we would drink, and then eventually that opened the door and it led into worse things: drugs, addiction, alcoholism. And he talks about how his dreams were coming true and he had everything, all the women, all the drugs, all the alcohol that he could ever wish for, but he says it was all a lie. And he says it would turn against him. It starts to wear on you, he says. It wears on your personality. It wears on your relationships, and everything is affected by it negatively. Everything. He talks about a few occasions where he felt good, the birth of his daughter and when their album went gold. But he said, time and again, he could just not stay sober and knew that eventually he would hit rock bottom. He would look at the people around him, the person that he had a child with, and saw how it was destroying her life, and he would hate her for it. Why can't you see what it was doing? I never want to be that way. And he would try to give up, but he would just get right back into it. And he said, I became everything that I never wanted to be. I sunk to the lowest gutter I could ever think of. You see, he and the younger son have something in common. They turned their backs on who they are and started living in reckless abandon, looking for fulfillment, for validation, for happiness in all the wrong places. And it can only lead to one conclusion. There are so many that get caught up in this kind of living. When we invite this lifestyle into our lives, and then we're surprised when we find ourselves in bad situations. We're surprised when we find ourselves sitting in mud. That's what happens to the younger son, right? A famine arises in the land. It only worsens his situation. He loses everything. And instead of going home, he attaches himself, joins himself as a servant, as a slave to a Gentile family. And that family makes him go out and makes him work in the fields serving the pigs. And at this moment, I think every listener listening to this story is going to be disgusted for several reasons. One, the Jews would be outraged that a Jew would be living with a Gentile and serving pigs. An abomination to them, according to the Old Testament. The lowest that you could possibly get. The Gentiles would have been surprised that a Jew would ever, ever attach himself to a Gentile family. And so in both minds, Jewish and Gentile audiences, they would see that this man has sunk as low as he could possibly go. That he is at the bottom, the very, very rock bottom. And it makes them ask the question, how does someone who has so messed up their life ever, ever get it back together? There is no hope. He is broken, truly broken, beyond repair. But the good news, right? The good news, why we are here this morning, is that the story does not end there. The good news is that we do not leave that man sitting in the mud. That we pick up his story and we show that there is hope. So for those of you who might be identifying in some ways with this story, know that it doesn't end here. Your story does not have to end here. What can we learn from this young man and his journey back to his father? When he came to himself, he said, "How many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread, but I perish here with hunger? I will arise and I will go to my father." I love that phrase, he came to himself. I picture him sitting in the mud, tired, dirty, filthy, despairing over his life, wondering how in the world could I have ever gotten to this situation? Wondering how in the world am I going to get out of this? And then bang! He remembers. He remembers who he is. I have a family. I have a father who has always loved me. Maybe, just maybe, he'll take me back. He remembers who he is. Brian describes his slapping the head moment in his video. He says, "My life was spinning out of control. I used to wake up in the morning, I would get high, eat a sandwich, and then take my young daughter to school." He recalled a time when he was out on tour and his daughter, probably 5, 6 at the time, came to visit him and came skipping through the living room singing one of his songs. "All day long, I dream about sex." And he said, "I heard that and it hit me. What am I doing with my life? What am I doing to her life? I'm a junkie. I can't provide for my kid. I can't even teach her what is right and what is wrong because she can't see it in my own life." That was the moment that he knew that he needed to get clean. This morning, if you can identify with the younger son, if you are finding yourself in a broken situation, lost, unable to see a way out, what is it going to take for you to slap your head and to remember who you are? To remember whose you are. Is it going to take someone walking out on you? Is it going to take a brush with death? Is it going to take a few nights in jail? What is it going to take for you to wake up and realize that the life that you are living is not the life you are meant for? You are meant for something so much more. The phrase "he came to himself" affirms the human capacity to renounce foolish error and to once again claim or reclaim what God has offered you. Peter writes in 2 Peter 3:9, "The Lord is not slow to fulfill his promise, as some count slowness, but he is patient. And he is not wishing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance." Paul wrote to Timothy, "This is good and it is pleasing in the sight of God our Savior, who desires all people to be saved and come to the knowledge of truth." Jesus fills his parables with talk of rejoicing over the one that was lost and now is found. Know that Jesus is waiting on you. Know that no matter who you are, what you've done, or where you've been, God is not willing to leave you there, but is willing to wait for you. And notice how this man takes responsibility for his own actions. He says, I will arise and I will go to my father and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against you. I get the idea that God just wonders why we don't come clean with him. He already knows. He already knows who we are. He already knows what we've done. And he's just waiting. He's waiting for us to make that step. You know, when I was a kid, I had to learn this lesson. I was staying home from school and I was by myself. It was snowing outside. And I got in my mind what would be an epic idea. There was a fire burning in the fireplace. And I thought to myself, I'm going to take a newspaper. I'm going to roll that newspaper up real tight. And then I'm going to go and I'm going to put it in the fire. Not to feed the fire. I want to light the end of it like an Olympic torch. I'm going to pull it out of the fire and I'm going to watch it burn. And then my great idea is that as it gets close to my hand, in just the last minute, I'm going to take it outside and I'm going to put it in the snow and let it sizzle. I know, right? Sounds awesome, right? You're all going, yeah, I would totally do that. And so I do it. I pull it out of the fire and I'm standing there and I'm looking at it and I start to realize fire's hot and it's getting close to my hand. I'm like, this is not a good idea. And I start to run. Yeah. Fire landing on the carpet. Carpet catching fire. And me without shoes on trying to put it out. And I know you're going, wait a second, I thought you were going outside with this. Why didn't you have shoes on? I don't know. I wasn't the brightest knife. What can I tell you? But I start trying to put this fire out and I finally get it out and there's a hole in our carpet about this big in the middle of the living room. I'm like, what am I going to do? I don't know how to fix carpet. And so I'm thinking, I've got a few hours before my parents get home, just enough time to rearrange the living room. And so my parents get home and there's a big couch sitting in the middle of the living room. And I'm in bed pretending to be asleep because in my mind I'm going, if I'm asleep, they're not going to come in and bother me. Again, I don't know. What can I tell you? And so I hear my parents come home and I hear them talking, and then they get quiet. Then I hear him go, Justin? Question mark. Hear some stuff shuffling and moving around. Justin? And they come and they knock on my door and they open it up. I'm like, I'm sleeping. And they're like, what did you do? I didn't do anything. What are you talking about? I'm like, why is there a big hole in the carpet? It's like, oh, that. It was a dog? And they're like, Justin, we don't have a dog. I'm like, well, then I don't know. And I got in trouble. You can imagine. I got in big trouble. And they asked me, why didn't you just tell us? Sure, you still would have been in trouble, but it would not have been near as bad as it's going to be. And so I learned at that moment, anytime anything ever happened, go to your parents. I'm sure they got tired of me. It's okay. You drop some bread on the ground. It's fine. It's not a big deal. You know, I mean, I was so concerned with making sure they knew, because they always knew. Kids, your parents always know. God tells them. So what is the moral of this story, right? The moral of this story is tell God. Remember who you are. Remember that He already knows and is just waiting for you to take responsibility. But so many times when we find ourselves broken, don't we want to blame it on others? We want to blame it on our parents. We want to blame it on our husband or on our wife or on the other person or on a circumstance. But we always have choice. We always have a choice and we should always, always choose God. And so finally, he humbles himself. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And so he arose and he went to his father to tell him this very thing. He has reclaimed his identity. He has remembered who he is. And he has at last found humility. And he can only hope that there is enough grace, enough goodwill to be a servant. Because he knows that being a servant to his father is far better than being a servant to the world. I want you to hear that. Being a servant to God, being a slave to God is far better than being a servant to the world. Because what does the world offer us but pain and heartache, addiction, loss? What does God offer us? Salvation, hope. He offers to set you free, to put you on a better path and give you hope that something better exists out there. Which would you rather serve? Something that only takes, or something that so desperately wants to give? Who will you choose to serve? God or the world? Thanks be to God, though you were once slaves of sin, you have become obedient from the heart to the standard of teaching to which you were committed, having been set free from sin and become a slave to righteousness. The way back to your Father requires that you remember who you are and who you are supposed to be. That you find humility within yourself enough to take responsibility for what you've done and go to the Father to be used by Him, to serve His will. If you are hurting, if you are broken this morning, this message is for you. Know that there is hope. There is always hope. For the rest of us, I'm sure you know someone who is broken and hurting and lost. All of us at one point have been in this situation. This is a message that all of us need to hear, that God is waiting for us. At the end of the video, Brian shares what happens next. He said, I was having a meeting with my real estate agent, and he said to me, Brian, I don't know where this came from, and I don't really do this kind of thing, but a verse had popped out to me last night, and I wanted to share it with you. And you know, I'm uncomfortable. I've not really done this before, but I thought you might need to hear it. I was reading in Matthew chapter 11 and verse 28, and I thought you needed to hear this. Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. And he thought to himself, I am weary. I am heavy laden, and I need rest. So he begins to go to church with this man. Eventually, he gives his life to God, throws away his drugs, quits his career, turns his back on that lifestyle, commits to his daughter, and turns himself around. He said, I thought I could get everything I ever wanted out of this life. All my dreams have come true. My career was doing better than I could ever have imagined. But as much as I chased money and women and drugs and alcohol, as much as I could ever fill myself up with, nothing ever left me fulfilled. It wasn't until I found Christ that I felt truly whole. For the broken and for the lost, know that you can come home. Know that God is waiting on you. If you find yourself in that position where you felt like you have gotten so far into sin that you can't come out of it, know that God is waiting. There are going to be some older brothers out there, but I have a message for them next week. But know for now that God is willing and waiting, and He loves you. If you have yet to commit yourself to God, if you have yet to open yourself up to the kind of love, to the kind of hope that He can offer, I pray that you would do that this morning by putting on Christ, receiving the forgiveness of your sins, and being saved by baptism. If there is anything our congregation can do for you, if there is anything that we can pray for you, don't let fear, don't let any of these things hold you back. Find someone, talk to someone, or come now while we stand and sing.